Hey, how we doing? Okay, some people are awake. I'm gonna guess the rest of you are still really sleepy from camp. I am, but I drew the short straw, and so I'm up here with you guys, but I'm excited to be here. A little sleepy, but I'm excited to be here. If we've not met before, my name is Davis. I'm on staff here. I would love to meet you afterwards. We're still getting the TV going. That's fine. I'm gonna keep talking. I wanna start tonight with a story. And it is about a guy named George Blake. Eventually, we will have a picture of him up here. But George Blake is a guy who grew up in Britain in the early 1900s. And he grows up in the military. He's in the British Navy. And he's so good at his job that eventually he gets recruited to this thing called MI6. Does anyone know what that is? Okay, Cole LeMasters knows. MI6 is like the Foreign Intelligence Program in Britain. So it's basically like the CIA. So in other words, George Blake is being recruited to become a real-life spy. And so he ends up getting recruited to go to South Korea in 1950 at the beginning of the Korean War. And his job is to spy on all the communist countries that are pulling there. That's North Korea, that's China, and that's Russia. And he's really good at it because for a couple years, this is him right there, those are all of his medals, like nobody suspects this dude. He's living in a communist country. He's working alongside communists, he's getting to know them, he's becoming friends with them, and all the while, he is sending information about them back to the British. That is, until a couple years into that spy gig, he ends up getting captured. He ends up in a North Korean prison. And while he's there with his other British spies, he ends up telling his guards, hey, I want to meet with you guys. Can you pull me out tonight, come up with some excuse, and pull me out in secret? And when they do, he tells them, hey, I've been spying on you guys. I gotta come clean. This is what I've been doing. But something has changed because I've realized that I've actually become a communist. I wanna be one of you guys. And so rather than spying on you for them, I wanna spy on them for you. So I'll keep working with the British, but I'm actually one of you guys. And when I first read that, I was like, okay, get out of jail free card, right? You just say what you gotta say to get out of jail. But in reality, he actually died just a couple years ago, I think in 2020. And he was loyal to Russia until the very end. So something happened along the way that made him go from fighting communism for the British to becoming a communist himself. So what was it? What made him have this kind of change of heart? Well, thankfully, there's a psychologist who studies exactly that. He studies what makes double agents actually switch sides. And he gives a couple reasons, but one in particular stood out to me, and I want you to catch this. He says, another important and linked dynamic could be described in a single word, identity. He goes on to describe what that is. Identity encompasses key ideas such as, who am I? Where do I fit in this world? Am I any good? I've learned that many of those who chose to cross the line did not have a firm sense of their identity. So why did George Blake switch sides? Well, he was looking for an identity. It wasn't just about politics or getting out of jail or which country he liked working for more. No, it was about his identity, that core question, who am I? But the problem is that he was being pulled between two super different answers to that question, right? He's been living in communist South Korea for years and years at this point. So he's from Britain, and he was raised there, and he grew up there, and he was instilled with all those values, but then he's been living in this different culture, and so he's being pulled. They have super different answers to that question, who am I? One says, hey, you're a Brit spying on the communists, and the other says, no, actually, you are a communist yourself. So you can feel the tension, right, that pull between two cultures with really different answers. But eventually, one of those had to win out. Eventually, he had to find a question, or had to find an answer to the question, who am I? So what captured me about that story, other than the fact that it's interesting, right? Because, like, I kind of sometimes think that spies aren't real, that, like, we made them up for movies like Mission Impossible and stuff. Like, have to remember that, like, those are real things, that, like, there are double agents and stuff out there, but it's an interesting story. But more than that, I think it's familiar. How so? Well, I think the story of the Bible tells us that you and I, we're actually in the same situation as George Blake. Obviously, flawed metaphor, it's not exact. You know, there's no world where we are spies being sent out into a foreign nation to bring information back. But we've been talking all semester as we go through the book of Daniel about this concept of living in exile. that you and I, we were created by God and that we were meant to live with and for him. And yet we live in a world that is not faithful to God. All semester we've been asking the question, what does it look like for us to live faithfully in exile? And so just like George Blake, we're being pulled between these two cultures, being pulled towards God in the midst of a culture that doesn't want much to do with him. And I think just like George Blake, that's not just a question of loyalty or motivation or willpower. I think that's ultimately a question of identity. It comes with questions like, who are you? Who gets a say in that? Who gets to decide who you are? And ultimately, what does that have to do with how you live? Because I think on the one hand, like I'm saying, we have the Bible, which tells us that our identity comes from God. What gives him the authority to do that? Well, the Bible tells us that God created us. Genesis 1, verse 27 and 28, they read, so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So God tells us who we are. We're his creation. But we're not just some like random, haphazard creation. No, we are made in God's image. We are made by a perfect, holy, loving God to share in his qualities, in his attributes, in his character, which means that no matter who you are, no matter where you're from, whether you even know it or not, you were created by a loving God and you were given honor and significance. Like that fact alone that you were created by God gives you so much value. But it also means that you were created with a purpose. That identity is not just for the sake of God creating haphazardly. No, he created us. And then he tells them what to go and do, which is to go and spread his blessing across the earth, to go and to be his image everywhere, all over the place. That's the point of them being made in his image, is that the whole world would come to know him and his goodness. And that same thing is true for us. If our identity comes from God, if we're made in his image, then we are sent out to go and reflect him to the world. We're meant to live faithfully to him, even in the midst of a culture that isn't. That's the rub, right? Living faithfully in the middle of exile. But then, on the other hand, we have culture, which tells us all the time that our identity is up to us. Your identity is kind of whatever you want it to be, right? So, you know, go find one that works for you. It could be based in your success, right? It could be based in your major, your test scores, whatever internship you get, whatever job you go on to do. It could be based in your social groups. You know, what fraternity or sorority you got into, who you hang with, who they're connected to. It could be based in your image, how attractive you are, how good your life looks from online. There are so many options, the things that you could put your identity into. And to be honest, it kind of doesn't really matter which one you pick. That's kind of the whole point of the cultural message, is that there's not one right answer. Any of those things could be it. It could be multiple of those things throughout your life. They're all the right answer, so long as you're the one that decides on them. And if we can just like kind of pause and be honest for a second, like that sounds kind of nice, right? Because that gives us power. It gives us the power to choose which one of those sounds best to us. It gives us flexibility. Like if one of them isn't working, then I can just move on to another one. I think maybe more than anything, the thing that sounds nice about that is it gives us freedom. It gives us the freedom to live however we want. Because if you try on one of those identities and then you realize that it has you living in a way you don't like, maybe it's too restrictive, maybe it just has you doing things you don't like, maybe it's just not working for you, great. If your identity is up to you, you can go live however you want. Which kind of brings us back to that tension, right? Those are two very different answers to the question, who am I? And so it brings us to a different question, which is, who are we going to listen to? You know, culture that says you do you. Identity is up to you, live however you want. Or God, who says that your identity comes from him, that he created you and that you were meant to live faithfully. That's not an easy question, and I think it leaves us kind of feeling torn between those two answers. I do, kind of all the time. Thankfully, though, we're not the only ones who have ever felt that way. We're not the only ones who've had to ask that question. Daniel knows this struggle really well. Daniel is the key character in the book of Daniel that we've been reading all semester. And tonight I want to look at a story from Daniel that I imagine if you've ever like been to a Sunday school or heard of the book of Daniel, this is probably the one that you know really well. It's from Daniel 6. It's the story of the lion's den. So at this point in Daniel's story, He has been in exile for a really long time. He was captured from Jerusalem, his homeland, by the Babylonian Empire. And he lived there so long that it's actually not even Babylon anymore. Babylon, like Alex talked about last week, was actually captured by Persia. So Daniel, he's been in exile for so long that he is now a Persian exile. And at this point, he's actually pretty old. He's like 80 now. And he's living under the rule of a new king named Darius. And we're going to see kind of the lead up into how he ends up in this situation where he's being thrown into a lion's den. So let's read. Daniel 6, verse 1, it says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps would give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful. And no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, 'We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in the connection with the law of his God.'" So Daniel, he's doing what he's done from the moment that he was brought into exile. He's crushing it. Daniel, he is working hard. He's climbing the corporate ladder, and he is about to become the king's right-hand man. There's like a new CEO in town, but Daniel is such a distinguished worker that even the new guy wants Daniel in his number one spot. So naturally, all of the other people who are working around Daniel, who are like actually Persian citizens, not exiles, they're jealous. They don't want this Jerusalem, this Jewish guy taking over their country. They want that spot for themselves. The only issue, though, is that they have nothing on him. There's no tax receipts. There's no old tweets. There's no shady business dealings. Like, Daniel is squeaky clean. Daniel is a dude of honor and integrity. So, if you think about it, Daniel has, like, everything that culture tells us makes for a good life. He has achievement. He has status. He has a good job. He has the admiration of the people above him, and he has the envy of the people around and beneath him. But Daniel also has something else. He has a God that he's faithful to. He's a God that he serves, and everybody in Persia, they know it about Daniel. It's one of the things they know. They know that Daniel worked hard, and they know that Daniel is faithful to his God, because just like us, he has spent all of his time in exile trying to remain faithful to God, torn between these two cultures. He's excelling in Persia, but he's not assimilating. He is staying faithful to God. And so these guys, these enemies of Daniel's, they get pretty smart, and they start to use that tension against him. Specifically, they know that Daniel has this habit where he goes back to his house and he prays three times a day. And so they come up with kind of a pretty smart plan, actually. They go to Darius and they remind him, "Hey, when you make a decree as the king, nobody can overcome it, right? Like, not even you." And Darius was like, yeah, when I say something, my word's final." And they go, "Great, remember that. Have you ever thought about maybe making a decree that says when somebody prays to another god or king that, I don't know, we throw him in a lion's den?" He goes, "Oh, yeah, that sounds pretty good. I like people praising me." And so he comes up with this decree. You see what they're doing, right? They're setting a trap. They're making it so that if somebody is caught praying to a different god, not even the king who's turning this guy into his right-hand man can save him. Ultimately, these guys, they're giving Daniel a test. Because up until now, Daniel has been living in the tension really well. Daniel, like we've been saying, is excelling in Persia. He's doing all of these things really well, but he's also remaining faithful to God. But now, this test, it's going to reveal who does Daniel turn to for his identity. Because if Daniel's identity is just up to him, then he has endless options, right? Like, he can go find it in his job, his status, what people think of him. He could choose to live for those things. He just has to stop praying. He just has to give up on that idea of being faithful. And then he can kind of go be whoever he wants to be. He can live out his days in Persia at the king's right hand. But on the other hand, if Daniel's identity really does come from God, if he's going to live faithfully, he's going to keep praying. But it's going to cost him his job. It's going to cost him his home, his reputation, and probably his life. It's not an easy choice, is it? No, it's actually a really difficult one, but I think it's one that if you're here and you're trying to live faithfully, it's one that you know well. Because like I keep saying, like a broken record, like we live in this tension too. This is what it's like trying to be faithful in exile. And I think sometimes, like Daniel, we can ride that line really well. You know, you can go to class, you can go to work, you can live in a dorm or in a fraternity house, and you can do all of these things, culturally speaking, and you can still come to Veritas on a Tuesday night. You can still go to church on a Sunday morning. You can still be part of a small group. You can still read your Bible and pray privately, right? Like, we can be students, we can be workers, we can be athletes, and we can be faithful. I don't know if that's news to you, right? I think sometimes we have this idea that to be faithful, to trust our identity in God means to completely pull out of culture. I think Daniel and frankly just the rest of the Bible says that's not true. That's a lie, right? We can live faithfully and be in culture. But eventually, just like Daniel, there is going to come a moment where we have to decide which of those identities is more true of you. Where does your identity actually come from? Which identity are you actually living for? And I think those of us who are trying to be faithful here, like sometimes that feels like an easy question, right? You know, it's really easy when we're sitting here on a Tuesday night or when we're at our small group or when we're at something like Camp Veritas this past weekend. You know, we see these things with clarity. We trust our identity in God. We say, yeah, I like what God's about. I want to get to know him more. I want to live faithfully to him. I kind of like the idea of that. But then when you're in the moment of that testing, when you're at a party or a tailgate and you are the only one not drinking, or you're hanging with certain people who are asking you to once again do that thing that you promised you were done with, when all you need to get that grade is to just cheat on this one assignment, just read the notes from the test, just copy off your friend, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of a different story. Or when you've been fighting your battle with lust, but then somebody wants to hook up with you, right? Like there are so many of these moments that are like tests for us, where it's difficult, we feel the tension, but eventually we have to choose which of these identities we're actually going to live for. Is our identity up to us? We live however we want. Or does our identity come from God? We live faithfully. I want to go back to Daniel and look at what he decides, because I think it's actually really clarifying for us. Verse 10 picks up and it says, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, this decree that said, if you pray, you're thrown into the lion's den, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. So Daniel, what does he do? Well, he goes home and he prays just as he does every single day, 3 times a day, which means ultimately he puts his trust in God and what he has said about Daniel. He chooses to continue living faithfully even when it might cost him everything. And I think a really natural follow-up question is why? Why is Daniel trusting in what God says when it is probably going to cost him his life? Why not just choose? Daniel clearly has the ability to go and form whatever identity he wants. He's really talented. Daniel's a really smart, wise, impressive guy. Why not just go and live with that identity and finish out his days in Persia? I think to answer that question, we actually have to answer a different one first, which is, what's the deal with the open windows towards Jerusalem, praying 3 times a day, right? Like, that's a lot of weird information that this verse doesn't really address. So we actually have to turn to a different passage, which is a prayer written by King Solomon, who was king over Jerusalem before Jerusalem was sent into exile. And Solomon, he's given this wisdom, and he knows that someday God's people, they're going to be sent into exile because they've been unfaithful. So he doesn't know when it's going to happen. He doesn't know who it's going to happen to. But he knows that someday God's people, they are going to find themselves living in a foreign land, trying to remain faithful. And this is what he prays over them. 1 Kings 8:48-49 says, if they turn back to you with all their heart and soul in the land of their enemies who took them captive and pray to you toward the land you gave their ancestors, toward the city you have chosen and the temple I have built for your name, then from heaven, your dwelling place, hear their prayer and their pleas and uphold their cause. So Solomon's prayer is that someday when God's people find them in exile, they can turn back to the place where God was present with them. They can turn back toward Jerusalem. And if they pray to God, he's going to uphold their cause, which means he's going to take them out of exile. That's why Daniel prays towards Jerusalem. It's not because it's some magic prayer that kind of forces God's hand into saving them right now in this moment. But what it does do is it reorients Daniel. It reminds him of the bigger picture that his life is taking place in. How? Well, at first, it reminds him who created him. It reminds Daniel that he belongs to a creator who loves him, who chose him, who wants a continued relationship with him. But I think more than that, it actually helps Daniel kind of zoom out to see something bigger than just this threat in front of him, to see something bigger than just all of these people around him who are living for themselves and their own identities. Because Daniel, he's been in exile for a long time, right? And there's a lot at stake in this moment. And when you're surrounded by people who are choosing things for their own good and seeming to thrive because of it, it is really hard to be faithful, especially when it feels like, man, God, I don't know if you're actually going to come through this time. So prayer, it helps remind Daniel who is ultimately in control, who is more trustworthy than the things that he can go and do and prove about himself. It's God. Because just like this prayer says, eventually, there will be a day where God brings his people out of exile, when he upholds their cause. Exile, it is going to end, which means so will these empires. And they do, right? Like Babylon's not around anymore. Persia's not around anymore. They all came crumbling down with time. If Daniel had chosen to live for these cultures and the cultural messages, then he would have come crumbling down with them. They come crumbling down over time. And I think the reality is that so will everything that you and I are tempted to put our identity in outside of God. And rather than me explain that in my own broken words, I'm going to quote a much smarter guy than me, who is a pastor named Tim Keller. He was a pastor up in New York for a while. He's not around anymore, but he's really smart, and he says this in one of his books. He said, the modern self, it is crushing because it must base itself on success or achievement or some human relationship. And if any of those things is jeopardized or lost, you lose your very identity. And so it doesn't matter if your identity is in your looks, your grades, your job, your status, your wealth. Every single one of those things has something in common. And that's that you have to do something to earn them. You have to do something to keep them. So finding our identity in those things, it keeps us stuck on this hamster wheel of constantly needing to do more, be more, go earn the love and respect and admiration of other people. It's just about us. It's just about us doing more, which I think ultimately leaves us anxious and sad because we're just left wondering, like, when is this all going to come crumbling down someday, right? It's like trying to hold on to sand. You can do it for a little bit. You can get a whole handful, but eventually it's going to come slipping through your fingers. That's what finding your identity in yourself looks like, right? You can do it for a little bit, but eventually it's going to fall apart. And I think the reality is we know that. That someday it's going to come crashing down and that we're going to have to start that cycle back over, right? Go find a new identity. Go find a new thing we can be good at. Go find new people who will accept us. Like, it's just this constant cycle. It leaves us anxious and sad and depressed and exhausted. See, finding your identity in yourself, it promises freedom. But in reality, I think it's actually slavery. It's slavery to a lie that is never actually going to fulfill you. It's just always going to lead you needing more and more and more. I think when we try to make our own identity, we end up settling for a smaller identity. But what happens when we turn to God for our identity? What happens when we actually trust what he said about us? I'm sure most of you have heard how the story of Daniel ends. Daniel's caught praying, so he's thrown into the lion's den. But in the morning, he walks out completely fine. Not a scratch on him. The lions just slept alongside him all night. And then in kind of a bit of irony, the men who actually accused Daniel were thrown in, and they are immediately devoured, which is kind of like a grim ending to the story. It's a little bit uncomfortable that like that's part of the Bible. It feels a little vengeful. But I do think it's a powerful metaphor. Because I think when our trust is in ourselves, it might look freeing, might look like the smart choice, might look like we're betting against God and that we're going to come out on top, but in the end, we end up devoured. But when we turn to God, we find a bigger identity. We find an identity that actually gives us what we were looking for in the first place. Another Keller quote, he puts it like this. He says, when we stop building our identity on career or our race or our family or any other created thing, and instead rest in God. The fears and drives that enslaved us recede, and we experience a new freedom and security. Keller says that we can rest when we find our identity in God, that it provides security and freedom. Why is that? Well, because when it comes to our identity in God, we get off the hamster wheel. Because remember, Genesis 1, you were created in God's image. And the reality with that is that you did not do anything to earn it. The reality with our identity, when it comes from God, it is received, not achieved. You can't do anything to earn it. You don't have to do anything to earn it. God didn't make you because he knew that you were going to be a big deal someday. God didn't make you because you were going to be the smartest or the most attractive or the best at something. No, he made you because he loves you. God has loved you from the very beginning of time, before the earth was even created. He knew that you were going to be here, and he made you because he loved you. And God is going to love you all the way into eternity when he's ruling in his kingdom forever. That's what makes God's identity for us bigger, is because it's going to last forever. But unlike the identities we find for ourselves, it's not something we have to go earn. It's something that is given to us. And the really good news with that is that if we can't earn it, it also means that we can't unearn it. It's true of you forever, because it's not based on anything you've done. It is entirely based on the character and the perfection of the one who says it about you. You are made in God's image. He loves you. He has always loved you. He will always love you. And there is nothing that you can do to unearn that identity. And so if that's true, that's security, right? That's not grasping at sand, right? That is standing on a firm foundation, something that can never be taken away from us. But also, if that's true, it brings freedom, because it means that you and I, we can move through life without having to go and earn our identity. We can keep doing all of the things that we've been doing without trying to like grasp at it and make people look at us and make people approve of us and prove ourselves to other people, right? Like, we can just go and live faithfully and trust that what God has said about us is already true. You can go and do everything that you have been doing and just live faithfully. Just rest in what God has already said about you. You know, you can work hard, right? You can get really good grades and you can shoot for that prestigious grad program or that job that you've always wanted. But you can also be okay if that doesn't go the way that you're planning. You can go live in a fraternity or sorority house. You can love the people there, and you can also say no sometimes. You can say no to some of the things that they're doing or offering and trust that your identity is bigger than what the people around you think about you. You can date without the hope that somebody is going to fulfill you, without expecting that somebody is going to come along and fulfill and give you complete value, because you've already been given value and honor and dignity by the God who created you in his image. Whatever that thing is for you, when you're tempted to find your identity in yourself, to think that freedom comes in living however you want to live, you can zoom out. You can remember what is already true about you, because you were created by a God who loves you, and he gives you an identity that will last forever. So I want to end by just asking, like, how? Like, that sounds great, right? Makes us feel good to think about that, but like, how do we actually cling to that? Because living in exile is difficult, right? We talked earlier about when you're surrounded by people who are living for themselves, it is really difficult to stay faithful. Those things start to seem a lot bigger than what God says about us. So how do we do it? Well, I think we look at what Daniel did. He prayed, right? Daniel, when he's in the moment of temptation, that moment of testing, that moment of wondering who he is and what he wants to live for, he prays. Prayer is how you and I remember our bigger identity. Because prayer is how we zoom out. It's how we step away from everything that's happening around us. All the noise, all the people who are living differently, all the things that they're saying about us, all the promises of those other identities. And it's how we do what Daniel did. We just go somewhere quiet. We just talk to the one who actually made us. The one who knows every single thing about us and still chooses us. The one who knew everything we would ever do and still sent his son to die for us. We pull away and we go and we talk with him, so that we can remember the story that our life is actually taking place in, the bigger story that God is telling about the world. I think the reality is that if we're gonna do that, we need to do it often, right? Daniel did it 3 times a day. Why? Well, because it's hard to live in exile. It's really difficult. Those voices, they are everywhere. And so, of course, he had to pull away constantly. Otherwise, he was going to get sucked in to the temptation and the lies again. So make it a habit. What if we were people who made prayer a habit? We did it as often as we needed to, that we went and we prayed. When those bigger, or when we start to forget what God has said about us, when those other identities that were being offered start to sound kind of nice, when we start to feel like we're actually kind of a big deal, sorry, I'm losing my place, but I think as the music team comes back up, I can give more examples of how to pray, but I'd actually rather just give you guys time to pray for yourself. Because I think often we want to pray. We want to do that. We want to pull away. We want to talk to God. We want to remember our identity. We have every intention of doing that, but we just don't make time for it. Or maybe you know that you want to pray, but you just don't know how. You don't know what words to say. So I'm going to put just a couple questions up on the screen to consider. And I want you to just take, I don't know, a minute, 2 minutes, just consider those questions. And then just ask God to help you. Just ask God to remind you of who he has already made you to be, what is already true of you. I'm going to come up and pray for us after that. Man, Jesus, this is hard. It's really difficult in the midst of the tension and the noise to remember what you've said about us. It's difficult, man. There's just so much going on, and at times it's really easy to doubt. It's easy to doubt because sometimes I don't feel worthy. Sometimes I feel like, man, if I was really made in your image, then I wouldn't make the choices I do. I wouldn't have the desires I have. I wouldn't live the way that I live. Jesus, that's why you sent your son to die for us, because you knew that we couldn't earn it. We could never earn it. It's the best news that there is. It feels defeating, feels restrictive at times, feels like we're missing out on freedom. But Jesus, I just ask that we would be people who realize that real freedom comes in following you. Because ultimately, that is an identity that can never be taken away. It gives us security. We can trust that it is always going to be true of us. No matter what we go and do, we can never unearn it. But it also gives us freedom to go and live, to be part of the world, to love people, but to know that our identity is not in those things. That our ultimate identity, it comes from you, Jesus. So we thank you for that. We just ask that you would remind us of that this week as we go back out, as we go and have to go to class and work and go live alongside people and actually face these tests and these temptations, Jesus, that you would be with us. We know that's true. We know that we have your spirit with us. And so we just ask that you would give us boldness and confidence. And then in those moments, that we would actually be able to take a step back and pray and talk to you and remember what it is that you have already said to us, Jesus. I ask this in your name. Amen.